Hello and welcome to episode 86 of Linux Downtime. I'm Joe.
I'm Armalith.
I'm Jem.
And I'm Kevin.
Nice to talk to you all again, and welcome to the show for the first time, Kevin.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
For a while, we've been wanting to have a discussion about languages and the hype around languages. And it seems to all start from Rust at the moment, at least. That's kind of the big hyped language. And Kevin, you do a lot of development in Rust, right? So I thought you'd be a good person to talk to about this.
Yeah, definitely. I do a good bit of Rust development. I've been working in it since just before 1.0 and around the 2014 era. I maintain a few open source libraries and programs. So it's fair to say I do a decent amount of Rust.
So let's start with Rust then. There seems to be an awful lot of hype around the language. And I kind of see why from some of the technicalities, but I just don't understand why it's got the level of hype that it has.
I think it's a few different things. I think first off, it hits the memory safety factor, which CVEs are growing exponentially at this point. So it hits the memory safety factor. It also builds on a lot of the language features and learning of the past 30 or 40 years of programming development. And all these things just kind of combine into a nice high-level language. It feels like a high-level language, but it also gives you the low-level control of something like your C or C++. So all these things combined, I think, just kind of hit an influx around the 2014-2015 time. It also came out right around the same time as Google's Go programming language. So they were kind of pitted against each other at the same time. And there was a lot of back and forth between those two languages. So I think those two things combined are what really built up a lot of the hype cycle as, is this going to be the next thing that's going to save us from all of the memory safety errors that happen in programs today?
It's funny because I've made the same observation many times, and I've gotten yelled at many times for daring to suggest there's anything at all to compare between Rust and Go. And I'm like, look, I don't really have a dog in the fight, but it seems obvious that the world was primed to accept something in the way of a memory-safe language that nevertheless gave you access to the control and performance characteristics of a low-level language like C. Because I think we can probably all agree at this point that humanity should not be trusted with direct memory access. We're not reliable enough. Seriously, we've Peter-principled ourselves there. It's too much complexity to trust to anything but symbolic logic, which means I don't think AI should be doing it either.
And I think it also, we have not yet reached a point where allowing the computers to do everything, i.e. garbage collection, is performant enough in all scenarios. So having something like Rust out there that does remove an entire class of memory safety errors, yet still gives you the performance as with no GC, is a huge step up in the language paradigm.
So why did Rust beat Go?
I don't know that I would characterize it as Rust beating Go. I think they're both great at different things. Go has a lot of momentum built up in the network programming industry. Basically, all the things that Google likes to do, network services, daemons, command line applications, those sorts of things. It does really well at those tasks. And those are also ones where you don't necessarily need that super low level, no latency, no absolute control over memory. But Rust has started to take over some of those industries as well, because it is really good at those. While it was originally targeted at your low-level C-like, you know, operating system kernels and things of that nature, it turned out that writing in this sort of higher-level language, almost, I wouldn't go so far as to say Python-esque, but higher-level language that has that low-level control, it turned out people like using that for network daemons, command line applications, all those sorts of things as well. So it pulls a bunch of different threads from various different languages and combines them all nicely into to one well-defined package. And actually, speaking of packages, that's one other area where Rust is decently controversial and also starting to pick up some steam.
Here's my chance to get yelled at by devs yet again, but it kind of sounds to me like you're saying that Rust is quickly becoming the new Perl.
I think I've heard it characterized more as becoming the new NPM, which that's a little bit of a pejorative. Rust does like to segment off bits of code into discrete packages, into compilation units. The term for a package in Rust is a crate. So much like you see NPM with all of the various packages, and you might have an application that has 200, 300, 400 different dependencies, Rust has kind of taken down that same path. Now, a lot of people in the C programming history or other systems level languages do hem and haw that and roll their eyes a little bit. However, I think Rust does have a really good story behind creating these nice abstractions and being able to leverage them in a way so that you're not having to reinvent the wheel or just copy-paste everything into one gigantic compilation unit.
So to be clear, when I made my Perl comparison that I fully expect to get yelled at about later, I wasn't just talking about the packaging aspect and comparing that to CPAN. I was already thinking that when you started talking about the way that, you know, Rust is starting to infiltrate, you know, in the low-level command line tools, and that, you know, people are enjoying the memory safety and the conveniences of the higher level programming. And then you talk about the way that it's bringing a whole bunch of, you know, formerly disparate ideas and programming together in one place. And I thought, hey, he's talking about Perl, which nobody but me loves anymore. So everybody will hate that I said that. And I look forward to your hate mail.
Actually, I think one of the funny things is one of the original, I don't know about the original, but one of the core team members in Rust for a very long time is a huge fan of Perl, and even, I believe, has a Perl tattoo, if I'm not mistaken.
Got me beat.
That's dedication.
I would definitely say that there are influences from that language. I have heard quite a few people actually using Rust for what they would traditionally turn to something like a Perl or a Python or even a shell script for. If it's anything longer than, say, 50, 100, 200 lines, and that's a good indication that it could be in a more strongly typed language that'll give you a little bit more performance. And sometimes it's not even really about performance. It's just about some of those additional packages that Rust does allow you to bring in. I speak with a little bit of bias, but the command line application framework in Rust, one of them, known as Clap, it gives you a lot of power right out of the box by just pulling in this single package, and you get all your decent help messages and command line argument parsing and all that sort of stuff almost for free, along with stuff like shell completion script generation and man page generation. So you get a lot of stuff for free just by pulling in this package. So people are increasingly reaching for Rust in those areas where they were traditionally reaching for things like your Perl, your shell scripts, and your Python. But that's not to say those things are going away. I still use those things day in and day out, because sometimes, honestly, it is just easier to write a quick script, especially if it's going to be throwaway.
You're not allowed to make the clap joke, Jim. You're barred from that.
I made that joke a few times when it first came out as well, so.
I didn't even want to make a joke so much as just say, hold up, I just want to confirm that some nerd named that the clap.
You were talking to that nerd right now.
So, Amleth, you are a bit of a Rust skeptic, aren't you? And you're more kind of team Go.
I don't know that I'm a Rust skeptic. I just haven't found a lot of use for it, I guess. From what I understand, again, haven't written anything in Rust. I've only used Rust applications. But from what I understand, by choosing Rust, you immediately limit yourself to, I don't remember all of the platforms, but the compiler doesn't spit out statically linked binaries for nearly as many architecture operating system combos as Go does. And I really like having such amazing cross-compilation that Go has.
Under the hood, Rust uses LLVM. So for the most part, anything that LLVM targets, Rust targets as well. Now, it does spit out statically linked binaries by default. However, it does not statically link in glibc unless you do a muscle target. It does support muscle. So in those senses, that's the only thing that's going to be dynamically linked. Now, it does not support as many targets as something like GCC does. However, there is work. There are actually, I believe, two backends that are for GCC for Rust. They are just not production ready yet. And then there's a third backend known as Cranelift, I believe the name is. That's more for development or ultra-fast compilation that is also in the works. And that one, I believe, is also targeting more along the lines of like your web assemblies and things of that nature, or just development builds where you prefer compile time speed over runtime speed.
Okay, this episode is sponsored by Factor. This bustling holiday season, you might be looking for nutritious, flavorful meals to fuel you up on jam-packed days. Factor can help you eat well for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle while tackling all your holiday to-dos. Looking for calorie-conscious options over the holidays that don't skimp on flavor? Try delicious, dietitian-approved, calorie-smart meals with around or under 550 calories per serving, or need an extra boost to support your wellness goals and feel your best during the holidays? Try Protein Plus meals with 30 grams of protein or more per serving. Treat yourself to high-quality, delicious meals over the holidays. Choose from 35 plus chef-crafted meals every week that support a healthy lifestyle and meet your meal preferences, whether it's calorie smart, vegan and veggie, protein plus, and more wholesome options. Amelith tried Factor and said the meals were delicious and extremely quick to prepare. He also loved the smoothies and said the tropical flavor was his favorite. So support the show and go to factormeals.com/LDT50 and use code LDT50 to get 50% off. That's code LDT50 at factormeals.com/LDT50 to get 50% off. Quick bit of admin then. First of all, thank you everyone who supports us with PayPal and Patreon. We really do appreciate that. If you want to join those people, you can go to linuxdowntime.com/support. And remember that for various amounts on Patreon, you can get an advert-free RSS feed of either just this show or all the shows in the Late Night Linux family. And if you want to get in contact with us, you can email show@linuxdowntime.com. So we've talked about Rust, and that's kind of the latest language to get a lot of hype. But this is not a new phenomenon. Jim, you've been around for a while, and you've seen this cycle before with the hype of various languages.
Very much so. Python is the one that really sticks out to me. I mean, by the time Python came around, I already had pretty solid Perl chops and didn't see a whole lot of reason to move over. And, you know, the whole world just got insanely giddy about Python. And frankly, I never could figure out why. It's a decent language. It's not terrible, but I've never really seen the awesomeness that everybody else sees in it. For the most part, my personal view of Python is it's a necessary evil if you want to work in any of several broad classes of applications or research, because all the tooling around it will be written in Python, and therefore you'd better get used to your Python environment shuffling and all the other nastiness that goes with it.
Yeah, like any sort of machine learning AI stuff, you need to know Python.
Yeah, it's not like you can't do it without Python. It's that if you're going to do it without Python, you have to invest so much work that, like, the only reason you're doing it that way is just out of your own irrational hatred for Python. Which, again, I mean, I don't like the language personally. I really hate the shuffling of the Python environments, you know, for different applications need different environments, and no project that requires Python environments ever documents the procedure at all well enough. But still, even, you know, acknowledging all that, it would be downright weird to absolutely refuse to use any Python tooling if you want to work with machine learning.
At my day job, we work in a fairly large Python code base. And in there, I want to say it was set up not even that long ago, probably 3 to 4 years ago, and already the packaging system is out of date. I re-looked at this code base again recently and was like, wow, let me re-update to whatever the latest and greatest is in Python. And that very quickly devolved into a 1 to 2 day process to even figure out what the latest and greatest is. It turns out there are multiple different approaches and avenues, all with competing priorities. So that is very much a system in churn, so to speak.
That's one of the biggest things I dislike about Python. There are just so many different ways to do one thing that should be simple, should be like a language feature shipped with the Python distribution, but it's not. Or the systems that do ship with Python, like pip, are insufficient for modern dependency management.
I think that also might just be because of the age of the language.
Yep.
Maybe with Perl and CPAN, people had already thought about, you know, pulling in different packages from Joe Rando on the internet, but I don't know that it was as big as it is today. And so I think it's partly just a product of its time and then growing out in the open. And to be fair, writing in Python is not the worst thing. It is a very approachable language. It's easy to teach. However, as can be seen from my previous comments, I definitely prefer writing in other languages.
Why is Python so popular then?
I think it goes back to that approachability aspect. It's a very English-like language. It's easy to teach to children. It's easy to teach to people that are new to programming. Most of the statements in Python, you can read from top to bottom and generally know what's happening. It's not really until you get into the more meta programming or more advanced aspects that it really starts to grow or take on a new life.
So is Python like the English of languages then? It's like quite easy to get the basics down, but then once you get into the real mastery of it, that's when you realize that it's actually quite difficult.
I think that's almost a perfect way to put it, yes.
I've often heard writing Python described as writing slightly more complex pseudocode. And I think that ease of getting started and even understanding somewhat larger code bases is why, for example, one of my clients uses Python for everything, because it's super easy to just pick a random college student and they can just start working on the code almost immediately. It's a lot easier to pick up than some other languages.
That's one of the things that I genuinely hate about Python, is the English likeness of it. I'm like, great. So it has ambiguous, overly complex syntax that's not necessarily the same way twice. It's not necessarily clear. It just happens to look a lot like somebody's birth language that they converse with other humans in. Like, that's not appropriate to task. This is not a conversational language. It's a programming language.
I think there's also the debuggability story when it comes to Python. That is another in the pro column. It's so easy to attach a debugger to a Python script and just follow it sentence by sentence, basically, if we're talking about it in English terms, that even walking up to a new code base, it's very simple to understand what's going on and which code paths you're hitting. Now, that also has the downside of sometimes you can't tell which code paths you're going to hit until it's actually running, whether it be a debugger or in production.
Let's see, debugger, that's what you call it when you put in the printf statement that you delete before you push it out to the GitHub repo, right?
Or in Python's case, just print.
You know, I've actually been shocked how often I see printf style debugging. And you know what? It's extremely effective. I use it myself, I have to admit. Mm-hmm.
It is extremely effective. I very rarely reach for a proper debugger. I mean, I can use them. I have been known to in anger, but I think a lot of it is a question of just how it fits your personal brain meats better. And my personal brain meats organize better around the concept of, like, you know, rather than inserting breakpoints in a separate debugger that's operating in parallel, just looking at the code and being like, right here is where I want a thing to happen for my testing. And, you know, that's where I insert, you know, a printf statement or, you know, a log directive or whatever it happens to be. It's easier for me than following a traditional debugger. But again, that is very much a for me thing. Please don't anybody think I'm out here telling you proper debuggers suck and you should just be doing print debugging. That is absolutely not what I'm saying.
Actually, I think you'd be shocked to find out how many for me's there are out there. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that their dirty secret is, I just printf debug all the time. I very rarely open up GDB or what have you.
Oh, I know how many of us are out here. It just, the more reasonable of us would agree with me also in saying that, you know, this does not mean that it's better. It's just idiosyncratically, this works very well for me, which doesn't change the fact that, like, there are times that you absolutely need a proper debugger to figure out what's going on. And I can't really think of any times that printf debugging will get you information that you can't get out of, you know, a proper full-on debugger. It's just, again, if it happens to idiosyncratically fit you personally, then it makes more sense to use that most of the time.
It's really easy to make a quick and simple feedback loop.
It's also convenient in that if you're a sloppy bastard and happen to leave those things behind littering the code base, it's a real easy tell that you're the kind of sloppy bastard that leaves a bunch of stuff that you didn't think was important behind littering your code base when you pushed it to prod.
Did PHP ever have any hype around it? Because it seemed like that was really popular for a while, but is really not popular now.
PHP had enormous hype around it. And the reason PHP had enormous hype around it is it was the first language that decided to just absolutely get behind locked doors and make sweet, sweet love to a web server. So the big reason that PHP's popularity exploded was because of the tight integration, first with Apache and then with Nginx. It enabled you to just seamlessly mix PHP code in with your HTML and expect the web server to figure out which was what. And that was an incredibly popular feature. Lots of developers absolutely loved it. And, you know, much like my rant about disliking Python's English-like syntax, because I find it muddled and unclear rather than easier, oh, I did not like just randomly interspersing PHP snippets into HTML pages. That's not my preferred motif.
Even though there might not be a lot of hype around PHP right now, I believe there is still a ton of jobs around PHP and a lot of people still actively using it very heavily. So I think it might be one of those languages that's just retired into the enterprise to where the hype is no longer its defining factor.
Facebook still runs on it.
Does it still?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think they have one of the largest PHP code bases in the world.
It would be kind of surprising if they didn't have one of the largest PHP code bases in the world, but it should also come as no surprise that that is a large number of code bases that we're talking about, because Facebook is something easy to point at as, you know, this just enormous monstrosity. But, you know, there's also, you know, every WordPress site you ever come across, PHP, MediaWiki, PHP, RoundCube, PHP. I mean,
Moodle.
It's still honestly the default language of web programming.
Nextcloud, I believe, is also all PHP.
Yep. Though they are working, or maybe it was OwnCloud is working on a Go backend, I think.
But can you ever really say something is all PHP? It's never all PHP. It's PHP. It's HTML. It's almost certainly JavaScript. You know, it's probably two or three other things as well.
But it's very much not a cool language to write in. Like, no one's bragging about being a PHP developer. People are getting paid good money and making a great career out of it. But it's not something that you kind of going to be posting loads about on social media, the latest new stuff in PHP.
I do know some people who say, okay, yes, older versions of PHP were bad, but newer versions are fantastic.
I also know people who claim that.
Doesn't mean they're right, but there are people. I do know some, I do personally know some people.
I do think, to Joe's point, that's the one place I don't think PHP ever did have a Python-like explosion. PHP was very popular in terms of a language to actually use to do things, but I can't recall it ever having, you know, a good, like, nerd cachet reputation. It was always like, yeah, I wrote it in PHP. What are you going to do? But that was always the answer, you know? It was like, nobody's excited, like, hell yeah, I wrote this application in PHP. Check out my nerd, you know, flex, whatever. But it's what they use to do the thing.
Meanwhile, with languages like Rust, we do have that nerd flex aspect.
So is that relatively new then, this idea of hype? Like, did it start with Python?
I think Java's another one that there was enormous hype around. I remember hearing write once, run anywhere over and over and over again.
Yep.
That's another one that had enormous hype around its inception and has mostly, I would say the hype at least, has died off. However, that's another language that is running the world right now.
Yeah. Thousands of developers working on thousands of code bases and keeping it ticking over for loads of businesses. Yeah. Much like PHP and a bunch of other languages. I mean, there's people still doing COBOL and stuff. You know, languages don't ever really die. They just go out of the news, maybe.
You might be amazed not only how much Fortran there still is out there, but like how foundational it still is. Like if you waved your magic wand and made Fortran go away today, tomorrow society would have incredible problems to dig its way out from underneath.
Right. Well, we should probably wrap things up then. Thank you very much for joining us, Kevin. It's been great.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. It's been great.
Yeah, we might have to have you back at some point, I think.
I would love that anytime.
Right. Well, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, I've been Joe.
I've been Omelith.
I've been Jim.
And I've been Kevin.
See you later.